What is happening, all you good people out there? Welcome to Unrestricted. I'm your host, Ben Lieber. I hope everybody had a fantastic week. My guest this week, man, he's a good friend of mine. I'm glad that he's back in the Twin Cities. We got to reconnect a little bit more on a personal level. His name is Henry Lake. He is the host of Lake Night on WCCO Radio here in the Twin Cities from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. He's got the late night shift, but he's got a big audience and a big platform. He used to work at the same radio station that I work at right now, at KFAN Radio. He did a 5.5-year stint in Kansas City working for 610 Sports Radio in Kansas City. He and I hooked up a lot of times when I was covering Big 12 football. And so we talked a lot of Big 12 football when he was down there, but he's back now. And the reason why I think it's important to have him on this podcast is because he's not just a sports radio host. Yes, he's great at talking Vikings and larger NFL topics. He's a huge NBA and basketball fan, so he's very well versed in all that and all of the metro area sports. I understand all that, and he's fantastic at it. But he has been on the forefront and out in front of all the social issues that have been going on in and around the Twin Cities with George Floyd, with all the COVID stuff. You know, he's very outspoken about the Breonna Taylor issue, just the social issues at large in the Black community. And he has a lot of credit because he's, I think, the only, and I think he even says this, the only African-American radio show host, sports radio show host in the metro. And so he has a great perspective to give to everybody. And he's been out there, and I wanted to talk to him just like where he was with all of it. We do talk about the deeper issues of some of the social things here in the Twin Cities. We talk about the things that are coming down the pipe when it comes to Minneapolis, the city of Minneapolis, what the Minneapolis Council is doing and where that could go in regards to the police force. So I hope you guys enjoy it. It's Henry Lake. It's Lake Night on WCCO Radio, but we're going to do it right here on Unrestricted. What's up, Lake?
How you doing, Ben?
God, it's good to see you, man.
Nice seeing you, man. It was cool that we got a chance to hang out a little bit. That was like 2 months ago now, it feels like, almost.
Yeah, that feels like beginning of summer, Allianz Field. Big to-do thing. You know, it's all the movers and shakers. The Twin Cities were there. And, of course, Henry Lake was there.
Of course you're there. Of course you're there. Of course we're there, man. You know, it's, you know, good people like to be around good people. We all kind of come together.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. You've been back in the city for a while. But, you know this radio business is crazy. Like, we don't see each other that often. And yep. There's not a whole lot of events. And you're actually probably the most social of all radio people that I've hung out with. All the radio guys that I know, they're like hermits.
Really?
They do the shows and then they go home. They don't like to be out. They don't like to be on the public. But you, my friend, you're out and about.
Well, I just kind of like, I think the thing about me, Ben, is because I don't see, I think that that's a little bit cooked. Because I think that a lot of people think that, man, he's everywhere. Where is, like, he's here, he's there, he's there. It's I don't go to that many places now. With us still kind of being in this whole pandemic and all that stuff, whatever. But I kind of pick and choose my spots. But the thing that I like about in normal times when you're able to get out and be social is that I like kind of like bringing people together. You know, I kind of like networking. Mm-hmm. So I think because me putting one person with another person that don't know each other and one person, because we all have different skill sets, right? Man, you might formulate a connection there that could be something amazing years down the line. Mm-hmm. You know, so I really like bringing people together, and I'm talking about on different levels, whether it's like just social settings where you're having drinks and all that stuff, whatever, or it can actually be a networking event. It could be you know, supporting a nonprofit. I just like being in the midst of people and kind of bringing people together. So
yeah,
that's just kind of my thing.
Yeah. Well, let's just get this. Let's get the qualifiers and everything out there right now, so everybody knows like what's going on and the who, what, and why. So, Henry Lake, you're the host of Lake Night on WCCO Radio here in the Twin Cities from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. You've got a late night shift, but yes. you own those hours, and you know, you've been in the Twin Cities before, interning at KFAN. Then you're at 610 Radio in Kansas City for a number of years, holding it down, talking all things sports down there in the Kansas City metro area and all around. You know, even talked about my K-State guys and, you know, all this other stuff. And then now you're back. You're back in the Twin Cities, where you basically grew up most of your life, in the Twin Cities. So you're home. You're finally home again.
Yeah, I'm home, man. This is. I mean, you can always go home, right? I love this state. I love the Twin Cities. I had a lot of fun in Kansas City. Like, Kansas City was pretty awesome, right? It's different. Every city is unique. Every community is unique. And the difference between Minneapolis and Kansas City is that when I look back to Kansas City, the fans, from a sports radio perspective, they are about it. Like 24/7, it's sports, sports, sports. They love their Chiefs. They love their Royals. They love their Sporting KC. And the biggest thing, and you know this, being a K-State guy, is that in that Missouri, Kansas area, they love their college sports way more than we love Gopher football or Gopher high. What, like, we love Gopher stuff, and you know, we like St. Cloud State and all the other smaller smaller colleges and universities. But nah, man, K-State, KU, Missouri, like, they're going next level with all this stuff. The fandom is through the roof. And it's funny because, and I would say this all the time when I would come home and visit when I was in Kansas City, is that when you're driving around in Kansas City, I don't care if you're on the Missouri side or the Kansas side, you see so many tags or plates on people's cars.
Yeah.
Where it's a display of what school that they attended or support. Here, you don't see that as much, right? It's like, yeah, that person went to the University of Minnesota. No, you got plates where it's Missouri, Kansas, K-State, all, you know, all the different schools. And you'll even see the ones where, you know, how it's the rivalry in the homes.
Yeah.
You got a K-Stater that's married to a KU, you know, alum. It's like, oh, wow. What's the dynamic of that with the Sunflower
House
Showdown?
Divided.
I know, a house divided. The, you know, Sunflower Showdown.
You know what the funny thing is? And I'm laughing and giggling inside because on the back of my car, Kansas State alumni plates. Kansas State alumni plates.
I didn't even know that. See?
I know. It's so true, though. Like, you'll see every once in a while in the Twin Cities, like, you know, St. Thomas or St. John's or, you know, just like you're saying, you, but it is bananas down there. Like, and you know, even my dad is like this, and I get it. That's like an older generation thing. But, oh, don't sleep on the fact that people in the back of their cars have hats and pennants and stuff in the back. In their back little window on display. It's not just the license plate or a bumper sticker. Like, they've got hats and everything. It's like a shrine to whatever they're proud of. And it's and it's a lot. Was that an adjustment? Like, how big of an adjustment was that when you went down there? Because, like you said, Minneapolis is not really like that. We're all about our pro sports, but not so much about the college stuff.
Yeah. I think it was just an adjustment from an on-the-air perspective, just because, you know, being a host at KFAN, right? So I did the internship, grinded, did all that stuff, whatever. And then years later, me and Sludge get the opportunity to get our own show, whatever. We do that. And then I start doing the late show, whatever. And so having a voice where you can talk about whatever, right? Because that's the thing. Like, KFAN, you can talk sports, but you can talk more than that, right? Barrero is a testament to that. You know, Common cracks jokes 24/7, right? When you go into a new area where you're the fresh face and you're talking non-sports stuff, people can get weirded out by it a little bit because they're so used to being sports, sports, sports 24/7. Like, it's a diehard, we talk sports in this town. If you're a sports talk show host, this is what we do. We're grinding through sports topics. And it's, you know, like, for instance, I think here in Minnesota, I don't think that a person could get by on the radio if you're talking sabermetrics and baseball, like 24/7, right? Like, you can mix stuff in, but like the analytic stuff, I don't think you can talk about it 24/7 sports talk. We're not heavy into sports talk like that here. There, you can get away with it because they're accustomed to, like my host, Jay Binkley, he's talking about the X's and O's of football, right? Yeah. And it just here you can do that, but you just can't do it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Now that you say that, you're right. You know, my buddies that live in Kansas City, we've talked about sports radio down there, and they say the same thing, man. Like, and it becomes sort of a more of a niche market, because you really have to be a diehard sports fan to really tune in, because you know that output that's coming out of that radio is going to be nothing but sports. And yep. So it takes a certain person to like want to hear that, and that deep dive and those details, and like every play we're going to break it down, and every player we're going to break down. And yep. I mean, to me, and maybe this is because of the Twin Cities market that where I've listened to sports radio, I wouldn't like that so much, you know? And yeah. I think it'd be challenging as a host to come up with so much content about sports all the time.
Yeah, it became challenging. That was my first time ever doing a 4-hour show. You know, I mean, imagine doing a 4-hour show.
That's a long time, man.
It's a long time. But I think like people have to understand, for me personally, I'm not into the techniques of guys, you know, on the football field. That's why I call you. Or I would call another former player, because you guys can break that down. Like, you can give it to the people and kind of let them know, take them behind the curtain about, okay, why this guy was out of place, or what went wrong here with this player, whatever, or maybe what this quarterback may have seen that led to this turnover. That's not like, I'm watching the games, but I'm not going in depth. I mean, I'm going to go to an analyst like yourself, a guy that played the game, whatever, at a high level, and ask those questions.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I got to imagine it's got to be kind of right in your wheelhouse, though, when it comes to basketball down there. I mean, you're a basketball guy. My God.
I'm a KU fan. So, you know, quite honestly, when that opportunity arose, if the Kansas stuff wasn't there, I probably never would have went there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, people have to understand, and bear with me for a second. I think that people thought that, or still do, think that I bolted to Kansas City because I wasn't getting an opportunity at KFAN, or that I had some sort of beef at my former employer. It's nothing like that. In life, you know, because a lot of people understand, too, that I've always, before I left to go to Kansas City, I always worked another job, and I worked in the Minneapolis public school system, and I was always working with kids. And I'm the person that always talks about volunteering and mentoring and being a good person, being a good role model. And when I would speak with kids, I would tell them, you know, when positive opportunities come your way in life, take advantage of them. You know what I'm saying? Because you never know what's going to come out of it. How was I going to look to any kid that I have talked to and worked with throughout the 15 years of being associated with schools? How could I look any one of them in the face and say that I'm going to turn down an opportunity to learn about another city, go meet other people, and actually hone my craft a little bit? I just wouldn't feel right about that. So that was the reason why I bolted, was because I wanted to grow. I'm not married. I don't have any kids. What is stopping me, right? So it was my time to go and do something different. And it was an awesome 5.5 years. You know what I'm saying? And so going back to KFAN, it's a phenomenal brand, phenomenal station with great talent. And there just wasn't a place, you know, for me to do the full-time show during the week. It just, you know what I'm saying? So like, I just wanted to say that, because I think a lot of people, you know, feel like there's a gripe or there's nothing there. I tell people all the time, look at the ratings, look at the talent. You know, eventually talent will turn over. That's any station, right?
Yeah.
But they got a great thing going on right now.
Yeah. So going back, so you were always a KU Jayhawk basketball fan.
Yeah.
Even while your time in Minnesota and the Twin Cities.
Oh yeah. It had been well documented. I would talk about it a whole lot, man. I mean, I, you know, some of my favorite teams were the teams that Paul Pierce were part of. I loved the kid Jeff Boshi, who I knew from his high school days when he was in the Dakotas, and because he was playing with Howard Pulley basketball, which I was aligned with back in the late 90s into the 2000s, and so he went there, and I was all about watching him. I've been a fan for a long time. And this is the thing about me, Ben, is that I become a fan of certain college sports teams, not because of the players that they have, but it starts with me loving and respecting the coach. So many years ago, when I was just a young kid, right? My favorite coach in college football was Bobby Bowden. There was something about Bobby Bowden that I loved, right? Because yeah. He just seemed genuine. He seemed like he loved his players. And it didn't hurt that he developed and made Florida State the Seminoles yeah. like a juggernaut, right?
Yeah.
So that was awesome. Same thing with my KU love is that there were so many things that you could look at and say, man, Roy Williams is just a good dude. Larry Brown, good dude. I mean, I love Bill Self. Like, he is awesome. So if not for Kansas basketball being on the station when I left to go to 610, I probably wouldn't have left. I had an opportunity, man, to go to Allen Fieldhouse 24/7. Who's going to bypass that?
God, how many times did you go there?
Oh, so when I first got there, they put me on basically for the first, 3 years as the lead person with a credential. So my other colleague, Josh Klingler, he was part of the actual broadcast. And now he's part of the broadcast now for the Chiefs football, because now they have Chiefs football too.
Yeah.
So, but he's always been a part of the KU football and basketball. Like, he's like the sideline reporter. And so he would go and I would go, and we were the consistent guys that would go the first 3 years I was there. Then after the 3 year mark, we actually transitioned. It was a swap. You probably don't know about this, but they went and enrolled with another radio station, and we ended up with K-State. So it was a switch.
Ah, gotcha. Gotcha. And that's not quite the same thing.
It's not the same. It's not the same at all. but for me though, it was cool because the K-State, first of all, you get a chance to go up and see another institution, right?
Yeah.
Much longer drive, but getting to know a little bit about K-State was super cool too. And I'm just a college basketball geek.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and Bruce Weber is a good dude.
Right. Right. Yeah. And that's, I would say the best thing about my one gig covering college football is, dude, I love going to universities. I love it. I love checking them out. You know, if we have extra time before a game or something like that, and it gets a little dicey sometimes when it comes to timing, because sometimes there's production meetings and flights and all this other stuff. But if you have extra time, I always love to just go on campus, even if it's like I'm going to go walk and go get a cup of coffee and just walk around for 10 or 15 minutes. Love it, man. That to me brings me so much joy, almost more than the game itself, is the energy of college campuses and seeing all the opportunities that kids from every part of the country can go and experience. And, you know, I get excited for you, my own daughter, who's just now going to eighth grade, but I'm not to like think about it too far ahead, but I'm like, I can't wait for the college process. It's going to be so fun. Like, she's going to be wowed by everything that we go and tour.
It's funny you say that, because there's one university that I want to go check out. I just want to roam the campus for hours and just see what it's like. Cause I feel you on that, man. I want to go to Harvard, and I want to walk around, and I want to take it all in, because my mother, she loved going to Harvard and taking it all in. And actually she taught various different seminars up at Harvard years ago. And so she spoke highly of the university. I mean, when we're talking about historically and those that love academics, I mean, how could you knock Harvard? Right. I mean, no university. Let me be clear. No university is perfect. There's no such thing as a perfect university, and you can get a quality education anywhere you go. Now, do I think that some institutions try to pull in better talent faculty wise than others? Of course, you know, if you got more money and all that stuff, whatever you just. But the bottom line is she raved about it. And I'd love to go to that university and just kind of walk around for a couple hours and take it all in.
This episode is brought to you by award-winning Douglas and Todd Bourbon. As I would like to say, Douglas and Todd is grain-to-glass Minnesota made. It's distilled in Osakis, Minnesota. The grains, the red wheat and the corn, are grown within 30 miles of Osakis, Minnesota. It's bottled in Princeton, Minnesota, and distributed nationwide across the great United States. So grain to glass, Minnesota made. And what do I mean by award winning? Well, check this out. It won a gold medal at the World Spirits Competition in San Francisco. And the World Spirits Competition is an international competition. It is the Super Bowl of spirits competitions, and it won a gold medal in a blind taste test against all the other worldwide bourbons, and I'm saying including your Kentucky bourbons as well. Minnesota can make great bourbon, and Douglas and Todd proves it. Go to douglasandtodd.com. There's a store locator in the upper right-hand corner. Just type in your address and your zip code, and you're going to find a liquor store nearest you that sells gold medal-winning, grain-to-glass, Minnesota-made Douglas and Todd bourbon. Get yourself some. We are also supported by my buddy Pat Kelly and his insurance business, Wexford Harbor Insurance. They've been my insurance provider for years, and I can't recommend them enough. I used to be with one of those big box companies and thought all insurance was relatively the same. But it's not. Every family has different needs, whether it's number of kids, cars, boats, personal items, homes, umbrella protection, whatever it is, Wexford Harbor can tailor the coverage to you. They will find the best fit and the best value to save you money, but give you the best protection available. They can do that because they're an independent family-owned company that has access to over 40 different carriers. That's right, 40 different carriers. You're not locked into one company's group of coverage silos. Pat and his partner, Scott Michael Bust, will optimize and craft a personalized insurance package for you and your family. With over 30 years of experience between the two of them, they will give you the attention, service, and value you deserve. And their reach is far and wide. They've got long arms. They can service Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin, Colorado, and for you snowbirds, Arizona and Florida. Check them out at wexford-harbor.com/unrestricted. That's wexford-harbor, harbour.com/unrestricted.
You know what I didn't think about when I was choosing colleges? Well, you know, when Kansas State offered a scholarship, I didn't have any other offers at the time, so I just kind of jumped at the first chance.
Really? But
yeah.
They were the first ones?
They were the first ones.
Wow.
They're the first ones. You know, I would say that going back to look at it now, just like you were talking about at the beginning of this podcast, the importance of networking, and it's amazing how certain universities are so good with your alumni that if you have that on your resume, dude, you're in. You're like in a certain club. You know, if you go to Stanford and you're in the tech or business or health world, that's a pretty big reach, man. That's that same thing with Harvard. So that is one of the things that I'm having to think about now as a parent is, geez, do I have to think about potentially like the networking that you're going to have when you graduate? You know, do you go to a small liberal arts college, maybe somewhere on the East Coast that nobody's heard of? You may love it, but that opportunity after college may be pretty small. You know, you go to a bigger institution with a bigger name, all of a sudden now you got a lot of street cred and people like that. And you can get in before somebody else.
Yeah. I think it comes down to, though, ultimately, all those things are factors, but ultimately I think it comes down to where does your child want to go, because it's their experience.
Oh, for sure.
Like, and that experience is going to be, that's a lifelong experience they're going to remember for the rest of their lives. But like for me, it's funny how we talk about the networking and where you go to school and all that stuff, whatever. So years ago, it was after Hurricane Katrina, Spike Lee had done, it's called When the Levees Broke. Okay. It was a production about Hurricane Katrina and all that stuff, whatever. So he was actually touring the country about that, because I think it came out on HBO. And so he came to Minneapolis. So I had messed around and I thought that I had contacted the right person, or I had filled out some paperwork or whatever to be able to talk to him. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally, it was on me. I own it. I totally messed it up. And so he was going to be speaking after or presenting or doing something after a Timberwolves game. And I think the opponent actually that day was, it might've been New Orleans, whatever. I can't remember the actual team, but So I'm there with my girlfriend, right? And I had totally screwed this up. And I'm like, literally like in the media room, and he's like around the corner and he's being interviewed. There were only two people, I think, that ended up getting a credential to actually sit down and have a Q&A with him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, you know, I'm starting to figure out, this is not going to happen for me. I totally screwed this up. And so, and it was so awesome because the Timberwolves organization has always been good to me. And they said, hey, pop your head in here. Maybe he has an extra couple of minutes, right? So I popped my head in there with my girlfriend, by the way, at the time, right? And I'm like, oh, man, I hope I don't get shot down.
Yeah.
So he's getting ready. Like, he's getting ready to move around. He's getting ready to leave. And I go up and I introduce myself, whatever, and this, that, whatever, you know, introduce myself. And I'm like, it came up that, you know, I went to Morehouse College.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he's one of our most famous alums. And he's like, Morehouse, man? I said, yes, sir. He says, oh, I got time for you.
Damn.
Seriously. And so I was able to sit down and have my, because I had like the, at the time, bro, I had like the Sid Hartman Morants. You know what I'm saying? I got the Morants I'm carrying around with the microphone. And yeah, he's like, I got time for you. And it was my second time ever meeting him, because the first time I met him was as a freshman in Martin Luther King Chapel. He was our freshman week. He came in and he spoke to us and welcomed us into the fraternity of Morehouse College. And it was amazing. It was awesome. And I got a chance to, you know, shake his hand briefly there with all the other freshmen, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Then it just comes full circle to where years later I meet him in a, you know, a sports venue.
See, it kind of matters, man. You got to drop that Morehouse whenever you can.
Yeah, it's just, but you know this. We get specifically, and it's not just, you know, us as guys, but even with women, there's a lot of institutions or networking situations where you feel like you're in a fraternity or a sorority, right? Like, you can be a part of something and not necessarily, I'm in an actual fraternity too. I'm a member of Kappa Alpha Psi, but it's just like when you are part of a clique, and I'm not a big fan of cliques in life, just in general, right? But when we talk about being a part of certain groups, somebody can elevate you and help you out in a positive way in life just because of the interaction there.
Yeah. Is that something that you tell when you talk to your younger kids, because you're still a mentor and you still love to give back to the community and stuff? Do you take some of those lessons and tell them that, like, hey, make sure that you kind of let everybody know who you are, you know, as far as everything, because there might be one commonality that sparks with that other person that says, I didn't know that about you. That's cool. Because I feel the same way. Or I went to this thing. Or I did this. Like, what is sort of the art of networking that you've sort of grown to learn that you can pass down to the younger generation?
I think to always, when you're out there going to meet people, or maybe if you're in a situation where you feel like you need people to, you know, understand who you are, and you're trying to sell yourself, right? And I'm not, you know, the greatest of salesmen, but I'm really a person that thinks that, or knows that, you should embrace new things, number one. And number two, when you're going out and you're talking to people, be willing to learn and grow and be a part of something different. I guess what I'm trying to say is, if I'm talking to a young person and I'm trying to tell them to go out and network or to expand their horizons, right? Don't be afraid, you know, and showcase who you are. Like, I think that a lot of people, they don't want to really showcase who they are because they want to fit in, right? They want to fit in. And you need to be authentic. You need to be yourself, you know? Yeah. Don't, because we're not cookie cutter, Ben. There's one Ben Lieber in the world. There's one Henry Lake in the world. I feel like, and I don't, you know me, you've known me for years. I don't do the fake stuff, man. I just, like, I love people and I care about people. And when I say I care, I'm talking about, like, I care about everybody. But at the end of the day, you just got to roll with a team of people that's going to be honest. You're going to look them in the eye. They're going to look you in the eye. And it's going to be a real conversation. Because you know this well, being a professional athlete, is that a lot of people have a network, or they have people around them that just, they don't keep it real with them, man.
Yeah.
I hate using that phrase, you know, they're just yes men, but I don't do that. Like, I value a person that's going to push back on me and say, Lake, I don't think that this is a good move for you. Or I don't think that this is in your best interest. Like, because I'm not a know-it-all. Like, I have thoughts about where I should go, what I should do in my business, all that stuff, whatever. But, like, I need people to bounce things off of because other people have great ideas, too. There are other people beyond Henry Lake that have great ideas about what should happen community-wise, in the education field, on the radio, you know, whatever it is. So I'm just a big proponent of having people around you that you trust, that you believe in, and that you can bounce stuff off of.
Yeah. I think honesty is such a huge thing. And there's a graceful way to be honest. I think a lot of people will say, like, well, I'm honest in, like, sort of a braggadocious, brash East Coast way, in which they think stereotypically, like, I just tell it like it is. Like, yeah, you tell it like it is, but you're kind of a dick. There's still a way that you can constructively say, like, hey, Lake, you know, I see where you're coming from, but man, this is the way I see it. And I don't know if this is going to be good for you, or maybe I do think it's good for you, but I think that's great advice. And the thing is, what you've already kind of talked about, it sounds like when you took your job down in Kansas City, in which you said, I got to walk the walk. Like, I can't tell these kids from some of these other neighborhoods where they feel like they're labeled or they can't get out. I can't tell them to take risks if I'm not taking risks myself.
Yeah.
You know,
you gotta
put yourself out there and be vulnerable if you actually want to take a step forward sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. You're spot on because, you know, we're not guaranteed anything, right? I mean, you and I could die tomorrow. What have we actually done? So like a lot of people, I like having nice stuff. Right. I like having nice stuff. Everybody likes having nice stuff. But one thing that people have to understand with me is I'm not somebody that gets caught up in titles. I don't get caught up in titles. I don't get caught up in, you know, the job stuff, whatever, because all that stuff can come and go. Mm-hmm. Right. And the material stuff is cool. But at the end of the day, I am more about two things. And the two things are, how many people have I helped and served, and how does my community benefit from what I do? My actual actions, right? Mm-hmm. That's important to me, because we all talk about leaving the earth a better place for the kids. So that's part of walking the walk. You know, if you're going to talk the talk, walk the walk, right? Number one. And then secondly, I'm big on legacy, man. I'm big on legacy because there are a lot of people that accumulate a lot of money and material things. And to me, that's not really worth anything. Once we leave Earth and hope to get to heaven, right? I'm not sure if I'm signed off. I don't know if I've got the approval yet. But once it's all said and done, honestly, though, I want 50 years from now or whenever I pass, I want people to be able to open up the book or do a Google search and man, this dude was a good dude. Like, this is what he left people. This is his experience. This is his life. There are a lot of people, man, out there with a lot of things that aren't the nicest people in the world. Mm-hmm. And they may leave their children or somebody with some material things, stuff like that. But what was your legacy? Like, I would hate to die tomorrow and my legacy was crap because I screwed over people or I didn't make the right decision. Like, I had an opportunity to do something phenomenal, and I chose to do the opposite.
Yeah, I think that's well said, man. I think we use that word. There's a lot of words that we use, I think, lightly, or maybe not lightly, maybe overuse, but there's no context behind it. You know, I don't know how many people, other players that would come back and speak to us, whether it's college or NFL, and they're like, man, you got to worry about your legacy. But they don't really talk about, like, what that means, you know?
Yep.
And so there needs to be a little bit of a guiding force in, like, what a legacy means and how do you go about doing it? And how do you go about doing it for yourself? Not doing it the way that somebody else did it, but doing it your way. And it's interesting.
For me, legacy is what is the thing that a person left behind that people will always remember about them and could possibly inspire somebody to do something great.
Right. I think that inspiration piece is key. Like there's, you can be known maybe infamously for a lot of things, and maybe your legacy is not what you want it to be.
Yeah.
But if you are in a positive fashion leaving a legacy, then your hope in the you that some young child or some young person or even adult. I mean, adults can derive inspiration from other adults, and I think that's okay too. You know, sometimes we're so focused on, you know, inspiring the young generation, but man, how often do you look around, and whether it's a movie, you can watch a movie and be inspired by somebody's acting performance.
Do you know how many times I will be in a school setting, and I'm talking about, I'll have a little kid that will be like in second or third grade, and I'm learning something from them.
Yeah.
Like I'm dead serious. Like there could be like just small short comments from a little kid that I think about, and I'm like, it humbles you, right?
Because they're honest.
It resonates.
They don't have a filter.
And exactly. Because like there are certain little moments that happen in your life, and you're like, man, it just really moves you. So like, I remember one day, I'll never forget this. I can't remember the young lady's name, but it was a little girl. She was like, I don't know, second or third grade, probably like second grade. And she came up to me and she gave me a hug. And then I can't remember what I was like, oh yeah, how you doing? You know, whatever, you know, you having a good day? Yeah, Mr. Lake, I'm having a good day. This and that. And then at the end of the little quick conversation with this second grader, right? She's like, Mr. Lake, I like you. It's almost like you're my dad. Because she's, yeah, you know, single parent household, no father around, you know, mom worked a lot. Like, bro.
Dang,
man, I'm like, oh man. You know what I'm saying? But it spoke to the value of having a positive male role model in her life.
Right. Right.
You know, like every day at school. Yeah, you don't see me on the weekends. You don't see me get turned up. You don't see me going to the club. You don't see me going to Bella Notte. You don't see me going to Seven, right? I don't know where. But you know what I'm saying? But like Monday through Friday, like being able to go to school, having that good structure from an education standpoint, and seeing positive people in the hallways or in their classrooms, that was like, I'm telling you, when she did that, I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, let me just say this as being a dad, dads can still go out and cut it up on the weekends now.
Yeah.
You know, we can still go out and we can blow off some steam. You know, maybe I won't be going to Bella Notte and getting bottle service or going to Seven and getting bottle service, but I'm still going to go out and have a good time.
Yeah, yeah, seriously. It's just like you think about it, man, and you're like, that's a powerful moment because it shows you how much the young people admire and they listen to you and they look up to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It doesn't just have to be the people that are in your household. Like you can look up to a lot of other, and we can learn from kids. I learned that for so many, being in schools for what, 15 years or whatever, like you can learn from young people.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Just like I was saying, they have no filter and they don't understand the world that we live in and some of the communication etiquettes that take place. They just say it like it is. And they can most of the time say it in the cutest little way. And you're like, hey, not only is that cute, but you're right. Like I got to reflect on that. I got to think about that a little bit.
Yep.
You know, that's a great transition into sort of like where you are I know that it's kind of hard to put into words, but the last 18 months for all of us.
Yeah.
But the last 18 months for you specifically, you want to talk about getting your voice out, getting heard, creating a legacy, whether it was purposeful or not, but around the Twin Cities market, you have been such a big booming voice for not only the COVID situation and the pandemic situation, but the fact that worldwide, now this is kind of hyperbolic, but worldwide social unrest sort of started here in Minneapolis. You know, I know that there are other stories from other injustices around the country. But if it was the straw that broke the camel's back, it happened here in Minneapolis, and you have been there on the forefront of it.
Yeah.
What was that, just sort of raw emotion at the time, or was it just like, and I don't want to say this like opportunistic in a negative way, but it was like, okay, I've prepared myself my whole life to be kind of in these moments, and I'm just going to let it fly and be real and be honest. Like, how did that all come about?
Yeah. So, I mean, social issues I have always talked about my entire life. You know what I'm saying? That's been like, we live in a time now where we talk about it more than ever from a sports radio perspective, or because, you know, people say, well, don't mix politics with sports, but we've always kind of had that, whether it's Muhammad Ali, we had the Olympics, you know, many, many years ago, where everybody, you know, they're putting the fist in the air. It's always been there, right? But it's always been that a lot of people mainstream wise have been uncomfortable to talk about it. I've always talked about issues. Like when I was in Kansas City, talking about Ferguson, talking about Colin Kaepernick and taking it, you know, so I'm always going to be that. But in this specific moment, you're right, man. The light just found me and it shined brighter on me, because in the midst of George Floyd and us being in the pandemic, it was just that moment. It was like, for some odd reason, I have to chalk it up to just Minneapolis was the epicenter. Mm-hmm. I guess that's the only way that I could look at it. And if you want to talk about the epicenter being, of all the stuff that's happening, being Minneapolis, where everybody around the world was here, like in terms of like media outlets, right? Yeah. All of them were here. There were protests that were here every single day. There were protests in cities all over the country, all over the world, actually, every single day, because people said enough is enough. With it originating here, let's be honest, our media is not diverse. The media in the Twin Cities in Minnesota is not diverse. I, to my knowledge, am the only African-American male that has a full-time everyday show on any of the main outlets.
Right.
So when people look at what happened with George Floyd and him being murdered, and they look at just from a historical standpoint, police brutality or whatever, people were like looking to me and they were wondering what the hell I was going to say. And I was unfiltered. I wasn't playing no games. And I was being honest about my experience as a Black man and my views and perspectives on this, right? Like, I could relate to that, because I tell you, sometimes I'm driving around in my foreign and I'm looking at a guy that's in a police vehicle and I'm wondering, how does he view me? I shouldn't have to think like that, or, you know what I'm saying, have to deal with that, those thoughts, but I do, because of the historical significance of, there have always been problematic issues between law enforcement and people of color, not just Black people, you know, but Asian Americans, the Hispanic community. And so, like, when all of that happened, it was totally organic and I was being real. Like, you don't plan to cry on the radio because a man had his life taken away from him in that way. Right. It was really, really an emotional last year and a half, man. I tell you, I mean, literally in those days where we didn't have any days off. So when the protests happened, right, and you saw like reporters that I work with, like Mike Max, in, you know, not at a stadium, right, out in the streets, because sports wasn't going on at that time anyway, right?
Yeah.
The bottom line was, we were on 24/7, every single day, no days off, Saturdays, Sundays. And so the content was, what's going on in the world? And I'm trying to pull together different people. Atan Thomas, who's an activist, an author, a former NBA basketball player. Bakari Sellers, a Morehouse man who's on CNN and who's writing, you know, who wrote a couple of books. Like, I had these connections with people, but I also used that opportunity to meet new people, right? We talk about it, all goes back to networking, right? Because I had never, like, Bakari Sellers is also, you know, he's a big name, right?
Yeah.
But, and he's on CNN, but he's a Morehouse man. And so we connected and bonded that way. It was just, it was real, man. It was so real. And I had literally, it was so crazy. I had people from major networks like ESPN, CBS. They're like DMing me. They're like, man, we're listening to you right now. We love what you're doing. We love that you're utilizing your voice. And I'm like, one of them, I hit them back. And I was like, you love what I'm saying and you love my show. I watch you every day on Around the Horn. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, what is this?
Yeah.
You know? So it just, in that moment, it was so crazy that we had all the attention on us and the world was watching us and the world is still watching us. People need to understand the world is still watching Minnesota. The world is still watching Minneapolis. We got other officers with that, with their trials coming up. We have the Dante Wright stuff. And so I was just in that moment, just being myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you, since you grew up in North Minneapolis and you just talked about how, hey, you're an African-American man, you're driving a nice car. And do I have to have these thoughts? Right. Well, that comes from personal experience and experiences built up from even other people. Did it surprise you that this happened?
No, because I mean, just from a historical standpoint, I mean, in this country, man,
But I'm saying like Minneapolis, though, like I know that we are considered flyover country. And I know that we pridefully around here be like, no, we're not really flyover country. Like we have all these big businesses. We're a big, thriving metropolitan city. But with that comes metropolitan issues. Was this always a simmering, boiling pot that you've known of and that nobody really covered? This didn't really come out of nowhere. Like, oh, what? Like, this is happening here? Like, this sort of thing has been happening for a while, and it just took this one instant for it to kind of boil over.
Yeah, it's the reputation of Minneapolis PD is not very good. You know, I remember as a kid, you know, coming up, and you could look this up later, Tysel Nelson getting shot in the back. That was like, that's a big deal to this day. And people feel like Tysel Nelson, he never got justice. And so like, that's in the 90s, right? So that's something that resonated with me and me being a North Sider and him dying like not far from where I attended high school. So looking at his story, you know, having fans that, not fans, but friends that have had negative interactions with MPD, oh man, it just, and then Philando Castile, man. Yeah. I mean, I know that wasn't MPD, but it was another police department, Columbia Heights here in Minnesota. But like for that to happen to him, I cried about that in Kansas City. I was on my couch, man. And I saw that video. I cried for him.
Yeah. That was awful. He did nothing wrong.
It was just terrible. And so like when I think about George Floyd, do I think that Mr. Floyd could have made better decisions about on his end on how it could have been handled and all that? Absolutely. Like there every day, there are going to be situations and things that people do that will lead to arrest where you'd be like, shouldn't have did that. Right. But we do not live in a situation where officers are allowed to be judged, jury and executioner. That's just not how it works. We have a legal system, and whether this guy likes George Floyd or not, you don't kill somebody. You know, it was just the war. And I think that particular moment, the fact that it was recorded and so many people everywhere around the world saw it, that broke it, man. That really broke it.
Well, I want to kind of rewind though a little bit specifically about the George Floyd situation, because we are in an age of misinformation. We all understand that. Original video gets put out, and all we really know of is that last few minutes of his life. And then it's a while before the 10, 15 minute full body cam video comes out and gives you context, which every story needs context for better or worse.
Yep.
And you mentioned, could he have done things differently? I think that too was sort of a game changer in how you view some of this stuff, because where do you put the onus of personal responsibility and accountability on some of these in some of these situations? You know, had he just cooperated, like, from the very beginning, you know, most likely he's alive, you know, like, and you can't take away from what happened in the last few minutes of that video. And no, by no means should he have lost his life. But isn't there just a larger life lesson here that, hey, you like the cops or not, like you respect them or not, at least cooperate. And most of the time, good things are going to happen and you're going to walk away with your life. How did you view when you saw the extended video of how everything actually went down?
Yeah. So when I looked at everything, I mean, the onus is on law enforcement to do their job. The onus is never on the person to be the perfect suspect, or I don't even know what the word is, right? Because they said that the allegation was that he was trying to pass a fake 20. But the onus is on not for us to be perfect. It's actually the onus is on the police department to make sure that they apprehend the person or do whatever they have to do within, you know, the legal realm, right? And take care of business. I think that there were a couple things there. So the first is, if directions were followed at the very, on the front end, do I think that he would have been killed? We'll never know that. I know that if I was in a situation like that, I probably would have did some things different, but who's to say, right? Because I think the reason why I say I think it's so tough is because let's say that one time with George Floyd, if he acted or if he had to follow maybe the initial direction or whatever, and I don't know what's going on in his mind, then maybe he'd still be alive. Maybe. We see every single day people of color that are murdered and they follow every compliant.
Yeah, but we also don't see, but you don't see is the thousands and thousands of videos where black, white, or different color do cooperate. And and it's a normal traffic stop. It's a normal it's a normal deal. Well, the reason we don't see those is because it's not newsworthy. So now I do think that we have a little bit of a skewed idea of how.
But the person didn't die, though. The person didn't die. I don't need a video if I'm just getting a ticket.
Well, true, right? But even that the video on the very onset, his friend, the gal that was sitting in the passenger seat, said was already annoyed with him within 2 minutes. She's like, "Would you just cooperate?" Just do what he's saying. And everybody's saying, like, well, why are the cops acting like this just for a $20 bill? Well, why is he acting like this just for a $20 bill? Like, the whole thing could have been handled so easily. It's like, hey, dude, did you pass a $20 bill? We got some questions for you. Yes, no, whatever. Have a conversation and see what happens. The hardest part of the whole situation and where the pot boiled over was there was some context to this whole thing. And I think people forget that there was context to this thing. They only see what happened in the last 2 minutes of that video, which is awful and should have never have happened.
Yeah.
That is my personal feeling on a lot of this stuff is we can talk about it. Let's talk about these conversations, but we also have to talk about context and details because those things matter when you're talking about burning down police stations. Those things matter when you're talking about disbanding or defunding the police. Yep. Like those things have to be talked about.
Oh yeah, no question. But I think that the context that matters the most is race is a part of this conversation. So like, for instance, how are we able to de-escalate and apprehend white Americans better than anybody else? Like literally, and I was texting with Lindsey Whalen about this, it was crazy that in Hutchinson, a gentleman is in, a white gentleman was in, what was it, a Menards, and he beat the hell out of an employee because they lacked some sort of wood or something like that, whatever. So he like assaults a person, he leaves, then he flees the police. He literally is, they on video, he's punching a police officer through through his truck window, and he's dragging them. They apprehended that man alive. Now, how does that happen? But we have all of these other bodies in the street. It has one thing. that de-escalation tactics are clearly used with white Americans. They're not used with anybody else. And that's a problem. That is bias in policing. And it has the word. I'm glad you brought up defund, abolish. Let me get to that for a second. I am so frustrated with people that are talking about defund and abolish the police. It's not happening. It shouldn't happen. I shouldn't say it's not happening. It shouldn't happen. It's ridiculous.
It's going to be voted on here in November in Minneapolis.
Agreed. But let me, there's a couple things there, because a lot of times we get stuck in narratives. Me personally, not for it, never been for it, said from day one. I said this during the protest, that this is ridiculous. A lot of times, though, we talk about narratives and stereotypes. A lot of times people look at what African-American people say and they think automatically, yes, Black people are anti-police. It's not true at all. Never been anti-police. I support police. I'm against bad policing. I think that anybody should be that way. Like, police do amazing work for our community. They are there to protect and serve. I have a lot of great relationships with police officers, right? To think that, and I'm not going to say that I'm sitting behind the scenes looking at all the models of what people are saying is going on with policing, but I am behind the scenes talking to police. I've sat down with the public safety, John Harrington. Mm-hmm. I've sat down and had a one-on-one with him. I have talked with Chief Arredondo before. Mm-hmm. I have talked to Roger New from Egan before. I'm going behind, and I'm talking to all these different people because I want to be supportive of law enforcement. I have law enforcement's back. Like, seriously, like, I'm not about, and I don't have to say it on the radio all the time or talk about it, whatever. But yes, I'm setting up those meetings. And I'm talking, how can I help? How can I be part of the positive change? How can I support you? How can I get law enforcement to be able to be more relatable with its citizens?
Yeah.
And to me, those are the tough, hard conversations that we have to have. We can't demonize the police for every single thing that they do. You can't. But to ignore the not just the here and now, but the historical context of policing, like, because I think that what we got to understand, Ben, is this, what happened with George Floyd, it wasn't just about George Floyd. It's about Breonna Taylor. It's about Eric Garner, you know, him getting choked to death by New York City police over a cigarette. Like,
right.
What's going on here? So in the broader context, I agree with you in terms of that specific stop, that things went haywire. And yeah, do you think that George Floyd probably would have taken some things back? Yes. But the de-escalation tactics that we've clearly seen have just been non-existent for people of color. It's been do as I tell you to do, or else you're going to jail or you might die on your way to jail.
I'm with you on that. And I'm glad, you know, that we're on the same page with the police department, because it blows 100%. My mind that not just here. I mean, they've talked about it in other areas of the country about defunding the police, and whether or not that's the right term. I know that everybody early on said, no, that's kind of a bad term. It doesn't really mean defund the police. It's just more of a reallocation.
Yep.
Let's come up with different sort of buckets that we can put public safety into. And does a police officer need to respond to every one of these sort of calls? Can we have other departments within the police department that kind of handle this?
Yep. If mental health and all that stuff. Yeah. Yep.
And you know, I've talked to police officers too that work in Minneapolis, and from their knowledge and their inputs that they're getting, they're like, well, A, the city of Minneapolis doesn't have a plan. They want to beat their chest and say, hey, look at the bill that we have in front of the city council, from the city council, about defunding the police. They want to seem so progressive that they want an award for that. But even if it passes, there's a police sergeant in Minneapolis I was talking to. He's like, there's no plan. It's just like, hey, we've got this bill. We want to vote it on. But if it passes, what's next?
And I said this from the jump. When people are protesting and people are talking about and using those terms, abolish or defund or whatever, I said, hold on. Guys, you're going from 0 to 100 real quick. Like, you're rushing to make decisions based on emotion. That's not what's best for our community. What's best for our community is let's have some constructive conversations. Let's come up with a plan. Let's see what actually works. Not just like what could possibly work here, but like, let's look around the country and see how policing works and what doesn't work and come up with, you just said it, with a plan. Rushing to put stuff in front of people and saying vote on it, like that's just, it's just dumb.
Yeah, it's dumb.
It's just dumb. But I also think that we need to, there's going to have to be something with MPD specifically where we're going to have to get an infusion of new officers and get the morale up, because clearly in our country, people view police in a different light now, whether it's right or wrong, right? Mm-hmm. And the morale, I think, is down on police officers and law enforcement. I get it, right? But we have to uplift them right now. And I say that specifically with MPD because, and I know this for a fact, I was told this to my face from high ranking police officers, that some of the guys on MPD, a lot of the guys that are left, not happy with the guys that were left. I mean, that left them.
Right.
And they were not happy because you're there to protect and serve. You're there to do a job. And some of them may have viewed some things coming down the line and they bolted. And the high ranking people that I talked to said that they were frustrated because they were just blindsided by that.
They're just left behind, you mean?
That they were just left behind by that. And I don't know if some of it had to do with the fact that maybe eventually some investigations were coming down the line.
Sure.
And it's going to be interesting now with the whole, the Department of Justice and where they go with all of that stuff, whatever. But I do feel for the good men and women that protect and serve our lives, Ben, and take care of us. I really do. I support them 100%.
But again, I agree with what you're saying. I just think that where's the plan when it comes to morale?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Same police officer I was talking to, same police sergeant. He's like, you know how hard it is to put on your uniform, to drive your patrol, and to have people on the sides of the streets MFing you, flipping you off, F the police, you know, fucking pigs, blah, blah, blah. We hate you. He's like, you don't feel respected.
Yep.
You're
the villain.
You don't feel wanted. He's like, we've got young guys that report to him that have terrible morale because it's not what they signed up for. And then they have to go out and give everybody the benefit of the doubt.
Yep.
You know, they gotta get a call in said neighborhood in which some of the community is cussing them out as they drive by.
Yep.
Then they get a phone call. They get dispatched to say, hey, you got to go respond to this call. And then now you got to say, okay, I got to take this with a clean slate and give everybody a fair chance. Like, come on, bro. Like, it's got to work both ways.
They're villains right now. That's what I said. The occupation of being a police officer is hard right now. They are literally villains. They are. And it sucks. It blows. Like I have friends that are high ranking police officers. Hell, I got fraternity members, FBI. You know, I've talked to people from the CIA. I've talked to people that run the gamut, right? But this is the issue though, because I agree with everything you just said. Part of the problem, and this sucks, but they'll admit this too. They are viewed as villains because of some bad stuff that other people have done, man. Like it's
but
not
you
like
get that, I, but it, you get that. Well, how can you get that message out there to the masses to say like, hey, let's pump the brakes here, man. There's a few bad eggs everywhere. There's a few bad eggs on your block.
This is the part though. It's hard to get that message out there when it's more than a few bad apples. Like the whole bad apples analogy doesn't work in 2021. It doesn't because we're seeing way too much stuff that have happened. We're seeing stuff still to this day, people getting beat up. Like I saw a video a couple days ago of a guy that was apprehended. They're putting him in the ambulance. He's literally in the gurney and the police officer runs over to him and punches him in the face. And the other guys are pulling him off. Like that's not supposed to happen. That's not part. So I guess my point is that I think it sucks. And I think that we have to change the narrative about bad police, bad police, bad police, because it's stuck in a lot of people's heads. But we need the idiot police officers who are hurting the profession. They have to stop. They have to knock it off, because they are the ones hurting the good cops that are riding around just trying to do their jobs. Another thing too, and I believe this is important. I think that the people, and this is how policing gets better. You have to have people that are working in these communities from the community. It's hard to justify a Minneapolis police department where 90% of the officers don't reside in Minneapolis.
Right.
That just, like, I'm not expecting Barney Fife. Like, I'm not expecting that, right? I'm not expecting everybody to know every single officer, whatever. But it means something when I grow up and I see, you know, or I go to school and I see Charles Adams Jr., who's the Minneapolis North football coach, that I know him, right, on a personal level. Or I know his dad because his dad was always around. Or Leo Johnson, rest in peace, Officer Johnson, when he was always around in the North community, and his daughter was a classmate of mine. Like, that does matter, because if people are living in communities where they don't have a connection to the people in the community, that's very damaging. You're not able to form relationships.
Like, yeah, I suppose in that capacity, no. You know,
I'm not saying that a person in the suburbs can't serve Minneapolis, but I'm talking about the numbers have to be drastic. You can't have 90%. That it doesn't work like that.
Yeah, maybe it's not an absolute thing, but maybe
it's not an absolute thing.
This goes back to the conversation in a plan. You know, why couldn't the plan be, all right, let's shoot for 50%. You know, if it's 90 where we're at now, let's have a plan where we can implement to where we start recruiting and training more people from the said areas that they're going to be working in. Now, does that sort of handcuff people now to certain areas? Maybe. Well, I'm sure there's pluses and minuses to all of it.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I think what we're in agreement with, you know, I don't want to shit on some of the profession of police force, but
yeah.
Some of the people that I know coming out of high school that went to the police academy were some of the dirt balls in the high school. I'm being real. Like, they weren't educated enough to go to a 4-year institution. They were kind of a lost soul, didn't know where to turn. Police work was something that it's a trade that they can go get trained for, and they got, you know, decent benefits and blah, 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 right? Enticing. But maybe not the sharpest tools in the toolbox.
Yep.
So you're not working sometimes in some communities with a high level of educated people. And then you give this person that maybe doesn't have a great education, maybe doesn't have a great background when it comes to emotional and psychological support, and maturity, you give them a gun and power.
Yeah.
Come on, man. That's a bad recipe.
And don't you think, Ben, don't you think that there should be a higher standard ethics wise for police officers?
100%.
That is the occupation where they literally can kill somebody.
Right.
Like if Ben Lieber says something stupid on a broadcast, or I say something, yeah, I can be taken off the air for that. Or you could be taken off the broadcast, whatever. But like, a lot of times with ethic violations of police officers, it's just kind of shoved into a folder and we don't hear about it ever. And we have to hold them to a higher standard.
We do have to hold them a higher standard. But that goes back to my original point. It's not the police force needs less money or reallocation of where they should be. They need more money. The police force needs more money. So find a way, Minneapolis, the city of Minneapolis, to not defund the police, but to add funds to the police. I don't care if you put them in different buckets and you say, hey, we're going to have just a domestic dispute, you know, group of people that handles that. We're going to have people that just handle violent crimes. Whatever it is, we need to entice a smarter, more ethical workforce. And I think these guys need more time off. Instead of them working the beat, you know, a rate, you know, 40, 50 hours a week, if not more. Do you know how difficult it is to put yourself in their shoes to handle the stressors on a day-to-day basis? These guys need more time off. They don't need to walk into every situation with the residue of the last situation they were in. And they might go into a George Floyd situation just pissed off at the world because I just had to battle a domestic issue with somebody with a weapon, and then I got to go and deal with this guy down here, and then, oh, by the way, there's a car accident with a fatality. Then now I have to go and talk to the family and tell them the bad news. Like, how do they handle that?
Yeah, they need mental health issues. Like, hell, we all need to take a deep breath. I'm glad you brought that up, because I'm like, some days I'm just like, I'm exhausted.
Right.
I know they're exhausted.
Yes. And then now you want to strip the funding from them, and then you want to make it so villainous and vile to be considered a police officer that nobody's going to sign up. People are quitting left and right. It stresses the workforce out anymore. They're working more hours. They're working harder beats. They got to respond to more. No. The answer, Minneapolis, is not to defund the police. It's to add more funds to the police.
But I think that we live in a world right now, Ben, where so many people are being villainized. Like, we live in a world right now, with all due respect, we got a lot of idiots that are out here. They're upset at scientists. They're upset at nurses. They're upset at the medical community. Like, we have made people villains that should not be villains. And it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Like, critical thinking, like, my mother had all her degrees. You know, she got the master's, got the doctor, got all that stuff, right? But she always told me, she says, look, don't put all that stock in this stuff. One of the things that you need to value is not only being book smart, but also street smart and having some damn common sense.
Right.
Common sense is very much lost today. I can't tell you how frustrating it is that a couple years ago, there was a woman that was doing a job. It was an education job, right? And her qualifications were her degrees and that she wrote a book. She had never been in a classroom.
Mm.
So you can't tell me much.
Right.
Because if the script is just what I read in a book, that's not saying anything. Like, I can sit here and I can read through any formations football wise. I can look at any sets that we're going to run on a basketball court, you know, traps, zones, but it doesn't mean anything if I can't go out there and actually try to do some of this stuff. And I'm not saying that you have to be LeBron James. I'm not saying that you have to be the best. I'm not even saying that you have to be halfway decent. You could be terrible, but at least you know what I'm saying? You get what I'm trying to say? It's at least you get it. You know?
You have to put it in practice. You got to see whether or not it works or not. You can put as many X's and O's on a piece of paper or words on a piece of paper, and you can cite as much research as you want. But until you've gotten your hands dirty and actually put it in practice and implemented your plan and it works, that's when you get credibility. Because you wrote a book and you got an education does not mean that you're totally credible.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm with you. Hey, last thing I would like to say, or I'm saying last thing, like I'm wrapping it up. You're wrapping up the.
No. I know that you've got to get going. So yeah.
Yeah, I just got a couple more minutes. So I think that one of the important things though, too, that we have to be cognizant of, and I tweeted about this just this week, is I hate that people are demonizing Minneapolis as a city, right? It's a beautiful city. The Twin Cities is beautiful. I think that the state of Minnesota is an amazing place, but we have people from areas they never typically get to Minneapolis, and they are talking so bad about Minneapolis. Look, I am not trying to let people know that Minneapolis doesn't have issues. Minneapolis got issues. There's no doubt about it. Yeah. I work in downtown Minneapolis, right? I'm a cat from the north side of Minneapolis. Minneapolis got issues. I was just down there. I left Target Field at 1 a.m. You know what I'm saying? But when you have people that are outstate that are talking so bad about Minneapolis, and Minneapolis is doing a lot of work to try to improve and try to make things safe and all that, and a lot of that's going to have to revolve around how policing is going to work, right? I think it's unfortunate that we have those conversations going on, because Minneapolis is such a great city that has a lot of great people, a lot of great places, whether it's the North Loop, Uptown needs to be revitalized based off of what happened with them. I think that we can do better. And I think my whole point about bringing this up is we need to be supportive of each other. I'm supportive of any spot. I'm supportive of Minneapolis, Maple Grove, Eden Prairie, Rochester, Duluth. Let's come together. Let's talk about building each other up as opposed to tearing everybody down.
Yeah, no, I think that's very well said. And I know that there's a lot of debate right now about whether Minneapolis is, quote unquote, safe to even visit right now. And I would say this, I echo what you're saying, that a lot of people, it's really easy just to flock to the suburbs and be like, you know what, Minneapolis, you got your problems, you deal with it, right? But you forecast this thing out 10 or 15, 20 years from now, an unhealthy Minneapolis is an unhealthy Twin Cities. It whether you like it or not, and whether you feel like it's your concern or not,
yep.
You know, Eden Prairie, Edina, you know, Maple Grove, you know, all the cities around St. Paul, you're going to suffer if there's not a healthy nucleus to this area.
Yep.
And right now is the nucleus hurting? For sure. For sure.
Yep.
I wouldn't say that it's unsafe. I just feel bad that so many businesses, more so because of COVID. I think this is more of a COVID issue than it is a safety issue.
Yep.
All those businesses, all those high rises, all those commercial real estate, those spaces, they're unoccupied. So when you go down there and you see people just milling the streets aimlessly, like they have no place to go, yeah, it feels unsafe.
Yep.
But if businesses were to come back into Minneapolis, guess what? Restaurants open back up, clubs open back up, all
yep.
the shops, all the supportive and the ancillary businesses, they come back. That's when you get a vibrant, thriving downtown. I don't look at downtown as a George Floyd ripple effect. I look at downtown as a COVID effect. And that's down to the businesses now, whether they feel like it's safe to bring people down there. That's not my call, but
yeah.
I think that there's a way to do it. And
I think there's a combination. I think that there was a residual effect of the protests that because I know people that their businesses were impacted by protests and kind of, you know, they were kind of beaten up around it, you know, windows broke and stuff like that. But you're right, though. It's more about us coming out of the pandemic. You know, I mean, I'm in downtown Minneapolis. I work there. I go to Target Field. You know, you go to U.S. Bank Stadium, whatever. I just think that the more that people talk in a negative way like that, it doesn't help us. It's not productive. We have a women's Final Four coming. So you mean to tell me that no one's going to be in downtown Minneapolis for a women's Final Four? Stop it.
Right, right. Well, and that's the thing. Like, going back to what you said earlier, you're not turning a blind eye to it. Like, are there issues that need to be resolved? For sure. You know, 100%. Let's ignore some of that stuff. But let's just address it and also just say that you can't ignore this issue and just run to the suburbs, because an unhealthy Minneapolis, downtown Minneapolis, is not good for the whole state. You know,
yep.
it just isn't. I
yep.
mean, that is the forward-facing deal for the state of Minnesota. We love to talk about our 10,000 lakes, but people come to Minnesota and they think about the Twin Cities and Minneapolis as a downtown. And I'm with you on that. So,
yep.
dude, always good to see you. I appreciate your time.
Pleasure, man.
I know you're a busy man. You're the host of Late Night on WCCO Radio from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. Go ahead and promote your social handles for me, please.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I'm big on Twitter, at LakeShow73. I'm also on Instagram. It's just under my name, Henry Lake. But yeah, no, man, it's always a pleasure to chat with you, Ben. I appreciate the opportunity to have this forum and this conversation. And you know, that's what I love doing nightly. You know what I'm saying? I love doing that on WCCO Radio. And I just like connecting and doing positive stuff in the community. So that's what it's all about, man. We're not going to be here forever. We're all going to die. What are we leaving behind?
Yeah, I love it, man. Positive voice, doing great things, dude. Great to see you. Have a great show.
All right, appreciate it, man. Take
care.
All right,
see ya. Bye. And that will do it for this week here on Unrestricted. I want to thank my guest, Henry Lake. He was fantastic. I hope you guys enjoyed our conversation. I want to thank my sponsors. Couldn't do without their support. DouglasandTodd.com. Go there. Find the store locator in the upper right-hand corner. Type in your address. Find the nearest liquor store near you that supports Douglas and Todd. I also want to thank Wexford Harbor Insurance. They're my insurance company, and I know that they're going to be your insurance company soon. Give them a look up at Wexford-Harbor, HARBOUR/unrestricted, to get a quote, figure out how they can find the best fit, value, and protection for you and your family. And I want to thank you guys for listening. You guys have supported this podcast now for over a year. I can't believe I've hit my one-year anniversary, and it kind of flew by with all of the family stuff going on, the football season starting. I didn't actually celebrate my one-year anniversary, so I want to thank my audio guy, Dave Yeager, for sticking with me this last year. I want to thank you guys as the listeners for sticking with me. And I do appreciate all of your comments and your feedback. Please, I think the only place you can really leave comments right now is on Apple Podcast platform. Continue to do that, please. Continue to rate this show as well on Apple Podcast. And I'll keep bringing you guys some more content and hopefully great content that you enjoy. So that'll do it for this week. I'll talk to you guys on the next one. Bye.